Over here, if you'd like. And we're learning Pele Yoetz. And we're starting with a concept called Vesora. We touched on it last week, but we didn't really cover it thoroughly, so that's what I had for one of my two goals for tonight. So I'll read to you the Pele Yoetz. You'll see it on the first source on your page here. In Yodea Besora Tova L'Chaver, he knows good tidings. He has good news to share with his friend. Is Maher Yemar Renulo, don't delay. As soon as he can, this is a wonderful opportunity to lighten up someone's heart, put him in a good mood. It's a great chesed. V'chaisa nafsho biglolo, you'll give his spirit a new invigoration. Yimarenulo, take advantage of the opportunity. Ule mitzvah techashivlo, and it's considered a mitzvah. Now, we've mentioned many times in the past that the Pele Yoetz focuses on things that we don't pay attention to. In the classical Musa Sfarim, as we call them, you won't see anything about bringing good tidings. Mm-hmm. But he wants to focus on this particular opportunity. He says, "Uma gam leish tzaddik." You become through this, by being a harbinger of good news, you become a tzaddik. Shagorem, because you cause shetichya rucho chaim yosifalo. He's adding life to his friend. And in the rest of this presentation, he quotes all sorts of statements in Chazal to prove his point. For example, Chazal say about a woman who reached a very, very old age. Her name was Serach Bas Osher, meaning she was the daughter of one of the Shvatim, and she would later on be the one, when Yosef finally reaches, the viceroy position in Mitzrayim, she's the one who's going to bring the good tidings back to Yaakov, which would be her grandfather, to tell him that Yaakov is still alive. And Chazal say, as a result of this, she went straight into Gan Eden. That's how great it is to bring good news. This is a great mitzvah of Gemilas Chasodim. And he says the following, that first and foremost, if you have good news to share with one of your relatives, that's what you should do. And then with anyone. He says, there are many people who are lazy about this, they're laid back about it. They want to go on their ways, they have many things on their agenda. And for example, he says there are people who travel far away and they neglect writing letters to their relatives. And their relatives are wondering how they're doing and what they're doing. And he says, if you take advantage of the opportunity, write such a letter, or you send a little email, I guess, or a telegram in those days, and it really gives the members of his household back home a great feeling of peace. And they are starving to get this piece of news from him that everything went well, that his trip was successful. He says you have somebody in Nebuchadnezzar in the family who's undergoing treatments, and the treatments are going well. The doctors have a very positive prognosis. Share that good news with the rest of your family, people who are waiting anxiously to find out. Don't delay. And he says the following, that if a person has that opportunity, he takes advantage of it, he reaches a very high level. So this is a new sensitivity that maybe we're not aware of, that he's focusing on, that we can take advantage of this. So what I want to show you is a number of different sources about the opportunity to bring good news to someone. First of all, if you take a look at number two on your page, one of the great Hasidic rebbes from the Chernobyl dynasty, called the Ma'ore Naim, writes in this week's parsha that when a person brings good tidings, he becomes enveloped with the personality, so to speak. This is a Hasidic idea, but what enters into his neshama is like a spark of Elio HaNavi. Because Elio is called, in Tanakh and all of that liturgy, he's called HaMevaser, because he's the one who's going to bring us the good news about the redemption. So that's the essence of the personality of Elio. He personifies Hamavaser, bringing good news, Besoros Tovos. Now we can imitate Elio, and if we do so, our souls become enveloped with the spirit of Elio HaNavi. Therefore, he says, never take Never miss an opportunity. Take advantage of every opportunity to run and share this news with other people, because then his neshama will feel like it's Elio. It's being he may not feel it in his body, but he says that his mazel and his neshama will feel this spirit of Elio. I don't know. Excuse me. Now we go on to the Ramban. The Ramban, in his commentary on the Torah, tells us about, thank you, a great piece of news. And that is, in Parshas Bechukosai, God promises that the land will be totally desolate, the land of Israel. Now, why is that a good piece of news?
Because it has, can be worked in the future.
Well, no, because none of the nations of the world will be able to settle the land and make it flourish. He says, "He besorah tova shein eretz yisrael mekabelas es oyveinu," that all the different nations that tried to conquer the land of Israel, they never succeeded in settling the land and make it flourish. V'gam zu raya gedola v'avtochalonu. This is a great proof to God's love for the people of Israel, for the fact that He miraculously intervenes in nature, changes nature, and He lives up to His promises. He says, the Ramban, that you won't find any yishuv, any settlement in Israel that's worth its name, that belongs to any of the other nations. And he finishes this presentation by saying, "Ki me'oz sheyatzanu mimenu," from the moment that we, the people of Israel, were exiled from the land, "lo kibla uma v'loshon," the land of Israel would not receive, would not tolerate any nation whatsoever. That's a great
proof. This is something the whole world needs to hear.
That's right.
This is proof it's ours.
Do you know that there's an American there's a famous American author called Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens actually visited the land.
Mark Twain.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mark Twain. You're right. Thank you. I'm sorry, Mark Twain. I don't know why I got. And Mark Twain testifies that the land was totally, totally desolate. V'kula mishtadlin lo shiva, and so many different nations have tried to settle the land. V'ein lekel yodam, and no one has succeeded.
So where is the say that's in Peliyot?
This is from the Ramban. It's number 3 on the handout that you have here on the page.
Okay, yeah.
And the Peliyot doesn't mention this. I only call your attention to the Ramban in the context of the Peliyot, because the opening line in the Ramban here in this presentation is Hine Besora Tova, that when the Torah says that the land of Israel will be desolate, that's good news. You and I would have said that's very bad news. But the answer is no, it's good news, because what the Torah is trying to convey is that God promises that it'll always remain desolate on the hands of other nations. It's only this one nation that the land is loyal to this one nation. That's an amazing, amazing thing. You've all heard, of course, of the Discovery Program, of Eshat Torah. This is very big in the Discovery Program.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a whole booklet, you know, different proofs that the Torah, you know, the veracity of the Torah. This is one of them. And in truth, you know, we've actually seen this throughout history. Now we want to study an insight into God's promise to Avram that his descendants will inherit the land. So it's very interesting. In Parshas Lech Lecha, and this you'll see on number 4, the bottom right of your page, Vayera Hashem al Avram, Vayomer Lezarecha etein es haaretz hazos, Vayiven sham mizbeach. Now watch what happens here in this pasuk. Avram Avinu hears two things from God. Number one, lizaracha, which means that you will have descendants. At this point in his life, Avram is childless. And number two, I will grant them the land of Israel. What is Avram's response? He builds a mizbeach. Rashi tells us that what's the significance of this mizbeach? It's called a response to a good tiding. Al besoras hazerav, al besoras eretz yisrael. Because he heard two great things, very good happy news from Hashem, he built a mizbeach to bring what's called a carbon of gratitude. Now the question is as follows. Although it's true that this is the very first time that Avram Avinu gets the besorah about his descendants inheriting the land, but on the other hand, although that's a new idea for Avraham Avinu, what he has already heard from Hashem is Lech Lecha El Aretz Asher Areka. He has already told Avram in an earlier prophecy that he should go down to the land that I will show you, and that he will have children. So now, basically, there's only one new piece of news, if you follow what I mean, new tiding that Avram hasn't heard, and that's only the Besora of Eretz Yisrael. So the Avir Yosef, one of the commentaries, contemporary commentaries, he wants to understand if Avraham Avinu got two good tidings. You know, first he got the good news that he would have children. That already we found at the beginning of the parasha. Now Hashem is telling him that not only would he have children, but they will inherit the land. Then why is it that now Avraham Avinu builds a mizbeach? Why does he choose to wait until the second tiding? And why wouldn't the first tiding that he will have children, why isn't that good enough? When he heard the original tiding, not only when he has this tiding about inheriting the land, but the original Besoros HaZerah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu already promised him at the beginning of Lech Lecha, when the Pasuk says, Eschol L'Goy Gadol, you will be the father of a great nation. V'lohosif Klum, at this point, Avraham Avinu is not hearing any new news about his zera, about his children. He's only hearing news about the inheritance of the land. And here you want to underline, Lama lo hoda l'Kadosh Baruch Hu al besoras hazera miyad. Why is it that we don't find that Avraham in response to Eschol Goy Gadol at the very beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, Avraham Avinu does not build him his bear? Why does he wait until this moment to respond with great joy, an expression of gratitude, to thank Hashem for the double promise that he'll have children and they will inherit the land? He already heard from Hashem at the beginning of the parasha, Eschol Goy Gadol, that you will have children. Why didn't he respond there with gratitude? So the Avir Yosef wants to break new ground over here. Really brilliant insight. He says, you know what? The fact that God promises you children, that itself, in and of itself, is not necessarily a good, you know, good tiding. You know, Avram could have children, like for example, he could have Yishmael, and at least Rashi's opinion is that Yishmael went off the right path. He says, "Mi yodea ma yezera, ulai yu rishayim chas v'shalom." Maybe his descendants will be evildoers. You may remember that Chizkiyahu HaMelech refused to have children because he saw in the Itzagninus that his descendants would include some of the worst idol worshippers in history. So maybe Avraham Avinu is really getting a bad piece of news. Ve'heven Avraham, and Avraham began to suspect that lo yimshach tzidkasam, that they will not continue in the proper way to be saintly people. And Avraham Avinu knew that the key to success in raising your children and guaranteeing that they will go in the right derech is if you hischabrus tmidus, if they will continuously connect l'makar shel kedusha, to some sort of sanctity. In other words, you can raise children, but if they're not connected to something that has kedusha to it, you don't know where they're going to end up.
Such as?
Oh, so what would be a case where they can connect to Kedusha? For example, if they live be Eretz Tmeya, they live amongst the non-Jews who are Tmeyim, you know, they're idol worshippers. I'm going to give a whole lecture on this tomorrow at the OU. The idol worshippers. So that doesn't connect them to Kedusha. And therefore, they're going to be influenced by their environment, and who knows what's going to happen to them. So this whole business of promising me children, says Avraham Avinu, that's not necessarily a good news, good piece of news. Oh, Avol mikave hanshev ba le'eretz Yisrael. Once Avraham Avinu fulfilled the promise, the command of Lech Lecha, he entered into the land. Here gish b'kedushas hanisgava. He was enveloped and he tapped into the great sanctity of the land. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, I promise you that your children will inherit the land. Ah, Now, retroactively, the original besorah that he got, that he would have children, becomes a besorah tova. Why? Because now they can link up to the land of Israel. So the great news about having children is that these children will inherit the land. And this is a great push for living in Eretz Yisrael. You know what I mean? If you needed a speech from the... the Jewish agency, or the... what do they call it today? Nefesh b'nefesh, you know, this would be a great drasha, nefesh. Then why did Avraham Avinu wait for the second besorah until he built the mizbeach? Because as far as the first besorah is concerned, okay, I'll have children, but who says that they'll connect it to kedusha? Maybe they'll live amongst the nations of the world, bitumah. And the answer is going to be the second besorah, because what did the second besorah add to the first? Inheriting the land. Inheriting the land. Now I know that it's going to be a good piece of news.
As you said before, someone could say that having children, I may end up with someone off the derech and inherit the land. The land, what we know, is going to be itself taken off the derech. I mean, the people on the land will behave in ways that the land is sullied, the land is destroyed, the land is made without the Jews are made to flee the land. So having the land, not necessarily always the best piece of news.
Well, again, when Avraham Avinu gets the promise that his children, his descendants, will inherit the land, we're talking about those periods of Jewish history, and perhaps we're living through another such period of Jewish history where the Jews will return to the land. Now, you're right, when the Jews are in Golos, then you don't know what's going to happen, because they'll be influenced by what he calls Avir Eretz Tmeya, you know, a contaminated land. The atmosphere itself is contaminated. But if for major chunks of Jewish history, the descendants of Avraham Avinu, you know, starting with Yoshua's conquest of the land and continuing until the end of the first bias, which is 4 centuries from Shlomo Melech and on, and then the second bias for another 4 centuries, right? Between the two batim, we're talking about 830 years. That's a large chunk of Jewish history. And that's the Besorah Tova. And not only that, even though after the second Churba we're going to go into Golos, but we have a promise that we'll come back to the land. And once again, we'll have to clean up all the contamination of the land. You know, we're going to have to infuse the land with this level of Kedusha. And now our children can link up with that Kedusha. So at least there's hope that at the end of the day, our children, our descendants will be uplifted and will be dedicated to spirituality and to sanctity because of the land of Israel. Again, it's a very interesting pshat. You may come up with other answers to the question, but the ball is in your court. I mean to say, the responsibility is now yours. If you don't accept this answer, you have to come up with a better answer. Because the question is really blatant. How is it that Avraham Avinu hears about the Zerah, v'eschol goy gadol, and he doesn't respond with building a mizbeach, which Rashi identifies with Hodah, you know, thanks for the good news? It's only when he gets the second besorah, which we saw here in the pasuk, "Lazarcha etein asaretz hazos." Wow! Now all of a sudden, Avraham wakes up and he builds a mizbeach. What is so great about this besorah that "Lazarcha etein asaretz hazos," that sort of, in a sense, mushrooms or overshadows the original besorah that there will be children, that there'll be descendants of Avraham? That's a great... You know, for someone who's childless, that's a great piece of news. The answer is it's not necessarily a great piece of news. When does it become a great piece of news? That's when it's guaranteed for the future, for generations, because it's v'etein es ha'aretz hazos, because the land will be designated for the people of Israel, for the descendants of Avraham. What I'd like to study with you now is something called the Avnei Shai. And this presentation of the Avnei Shai adds another dimension to a besorah, to a good tidings, because we've discussed in the past, and last week we started our discussion, we wanted to finish it today, that when you share good news with someone, you become a slavish with the neshama of Eliyahu HaNavi. So that's great. But there's another side to the coin, and that is how to respond to a besorah tova. Now, if somebody tells me good news about myself, you know, I'm very selfish, me, myself, and I, I'm very excited about the good news that he tells me. You know, let's say, you know, I got accepted to medical school. That's a great day. I remember the day that I found out that my son, my Bechor, Baruch, if anyone knows the doctor, he got accepted to medical school, to Einstein, which is a very good medical school. And I remember I was in such a state of elation, I threw things up in the air. I didn't know what I was doing. Because to get into medical school for this young man was an amazing achievement, because he went through the what's called the cheder system here in Israel, where they don't teach secular studies at all. And he was a self-made man. And he still is. So what's the response to a besorah? So if it's me, myself, and I, you know, I'm just feeling good about myself because I just won the jackpot. You know, somebody tells me I won the lottery. That's one thing. But here we're going to see a whole other dimension to thanks for a good piece of news. Even if the news is not relevant to you yourself and you didn't win the lottery. The Pasuk says in Sefer Bereishis, Parshas Chayisara, Vayhi kasher shama eved Avram es divrehem vayishtachu arz al Hashem. Who are we talking about now? Eved Avram, who's that? Eliezer. So Eliezer gets this great piece of news. And what is it? That this girl, Rivka, has been designated as the wife of Yitzchak. And he's elated about it. Says Rashi, what was the response of Eliezer when he found out that this is Rivka and that she's going to be the wife of Yitzchak? It says, Vayishtachu arza Lashem. He bows down to the Almighty. Says Rashi, Mikan, why did the Torah have to immortalize this for all of eternity? To teach us that modim al besorah tova, that a person should respond when he gets a piece of good news with hodah, with thanksgiving. L'chora, what does that mean? Rashi says here on this pasuk that you have to respond to a besorah tova and thank Hashem. Why did Rashi wake up now? This is Perek Chaf Dalid, Pasuk Nun Beis. Many, many psukim earlier, when Eliezer first encountered Rivka, and Rivka, you know, remember she came through with flying colors, and she served him the water and for the gemalim. So it says there, Vayikara Ish Vayishtachu Lashem. There it says that he kneeled in front of God. So why didn't Rashi already over there make this comment? You know, Rashi is very meticulous about when he adds his comment. He should have said it many psukim earlier, because already there at the beginning of the meeting between Eliezer and Rivka, Eliezer responds by bowing down to Hashem. Furthermore, does Rashi really feel that he needs a pasuk here tucked in the story of Eliezer to teach us that you have to respond and express gratitude to Hashem for great tidings? I mean, that seems so obvious. We don't want to be ingrates. If we hear the good news and Hashem really helped us, then we want to thank Him. What's the chiddush? What's the, like, Rashi found something new over here and he got excited over here and he canonized it. Mikan, from now on, we have to understand that modim al besorah tova. Well, what's so dramatic about this?
Because he built a mizbeach for Todah.
And also we learned it from Avram Avinu, correct? He says no. You know what? Rashi didn't feel compelled to tell us and teach us that you have to be moda on a besorah tova. But Rashi wants to tell us something else. Here's the besorah tova, shenaseis lacherim. It wasn't that I got accepted to medical school, but you got accepted to medical school. So if not my son, it was your son. And again, I have to thank Hashem. He says, Mitchila, at the beginning Pasuk, that goes back to Pasuk Chavav in Perek Chav Dalet, when the Torah testifies, Vayikod Ish Vayishtachu Hashem, there is Niskayim Rotzen Eliezer, Viskayim Simonim. Remember, Eliezer turns to God and he says, I'm gonna ask this girl when she comes out to feed me and my, you know, to give me drink, and we'll see if she gives me drink and she gives my gemalim drink. These were the simonim. These are the ways that Eliezer asked God to indicate and reveal that his Eliezer shlichus, his agency was successful. He says in that case, when Eliezer realizes that, look, she lived up to the simanim and she gave the water, Eliezer says, Poshut, there's no question about it, I have to thank Hashem. Because I put in all this effort, you know, I'm a very loyal agent of and servant of Avraham Avinu, and I turned to Hashem for help, and this is great. You know, now I can tell Avraham Avinu that I successfully achieved his goal and I fulfilled his agency. Aval Hacha, but here in the later pasuk, which we said was pasuk Nun Beis, Myri, here's a different thing. Kasha Shoma Eved Avraham is Divrayim. Now he's listening to Besuel, to Lavan, who say Kachloch, that they turn to Rivka and she agrees, and then they turn to Eved Avraham and say, here, you can take her. In other words, they agree to have this marriage. Ein zu tova l'Eliezer. At this point, Eliezer is not really the beneficiary. Ki im besora tova l'Avraham l'Yitzchak. That now Yitzchak has a batzug, he has a partner in life. But v'yafal picha, and here's the chiddush, v'yishtachu artzol Hashem. This is the chiddush. Here's where Rashi wants to emphasize that we have to learn something. That even if the besorah is not related to you personally, but it's related to someone else, you have to feel his joy and his happiness, and you have to respond with a hodah to thank Hashem for what someone else does.
Why? Can you explain that?
The love for another Jew has to be so intense. Like, for example, what we find is when Yisro comes to convert, it says that Vayichad Yisro. Yisro hears what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for the people of Israel. And he's so enamored, he's so overwhelmed, that he actually joins the Jewish faith. It means that when I feel something for you, that's a tremendous madrega. You've all heard of the Tzaddik Yerushalmi, which is Rabbi Aryeh Levin. So you remember the story where Rabbi Aryeh Levin comes to the doctor with his wife. His wife's leg is not feeling well. And he says, our leg hurts. That's the concept of the Jewish people. We're all part of one body. We all belong to one entity. So it's not that I selfishly thank Hashem for what's good for me, but even when I hear good news for you, I get excited about that. And I have to thank Hashem.
Why is it so hard? Because Eliezer is an Eved Avraham, so maybe it's only in this case, but not in another case. Depending on how here, maybe it's less.
Again, you're right. It could be that Eliezer here is excited because of his special relationship to Avraham and Yitzchak. But nevertheless, what's unique about this Besorah is that he at this point has no negius. In other words, he doesn't get any benefit. In fact, Chazal say that Eliezer himself had another idea in his mind.
Yeah, he had his own daughter. He wanted, right?
Yeah, his ambition was that maybe this marriage wouldn't go and get off the ground if Lavan would refuse. Because again, remember that Avraham made a condition that she has to agree to come back to Eretz Canaan. She, you know, we're not going to bring Yitzchak to Padan Aram. And in a certain sense, again, he doesn't say this, but I'm embellishing it, that Yitzchak, that if Lavan and Besuel would have refused, then at that point the whole deal is off. Eliezer can go back to Avraham and he say, you know, there's no possibility of bringing back a wife here, but you should know I have a good daughter. So in a sense, Eliezer is happy for Yitzchak, even though it's at his own loss. That's a tremendous level of besorah. Now here, in number 6, if you move your page a little bit on the side, he quotes the Stipler. It's a very interesting story. You know, many people used to come to the Stipler Gaon, and we all know that his son, Reb Chaim, now is also someone that everyone tries to get into, to get a bracha from him. So what happened was, one of the young men received a bracha from the Stipler for children, to have a child, and his wife gave birth after the Stipler gave him this bracha. It was a very warm bracha with a lot of feeling. In any event, immediately after his wife gave birth to, Baruch Hashem, a healthy child, this man runs to the Stipler and tells him the good news. The Stipler was overwhelmed. He was absolutely touched by it. He says, there are people who come and they pour out their hearts in front of me. They plead with me. And they show me all their difficulty and all their anguish in life. And they ask, please, would the stipler pray for them on my behalf? So the stipler says, I recite Tehillim and I add them to my prayers and I cry for them. But yet, nobody ever tells me what exactly happened. You came back to tell me that your wife gave birth. I'm overwhelmed by that. Take a look here at number 7. This is a fascinating story. We're talking now about the chief rabbi of the city of Nir. You know, back in Lithuania, Nir was a major citadel of Jewish learning. And the chief rabbi of the city, his name was Rav Elio Baruch Kamoi. And he was a very close friend of the Gadol Ador. The greatest giant of halacha in that time was Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. This is going back about 110, 120 years ago. He was the Rav of the city of Kovna. Have you ever heard of Kovna? Again, we know Kovna from the Nazi stories and how they murdered so many Jews in Kovna. But Kovna in its heyday was probably the center of Lithuanian Jewry. And here's a meeting here between the Rav of Mir and the Rav of Kovna. Somebody knocks on the door. At this moment in time, the Rabbonim are sitting in a Bezdin. They're deciding a very serious case. The door knocks and somebody comes in with a besora, a good piece of news. And he says that so-and-so had a good experience. We'll see exactly what it is as we go along. Then, just 5 minutes later, another person comes in and tells them the same thing. And 5 minutes later, a third person comes in. Now, we're talking about a tiding about a fellow named Moshe. We don't know his last name. In back in the day, under the Tsarist regime, they would conscript a Jewish boy at the age of 18, and you never could really anticipate when he'll get out of the army. It could be 30 years later, it could be 50 years later. It was a terrible situation. So they had to find ways of avoiding the draft. Now, a student comes in, and he interferes with the Rabbanim to tell them the great news that Moshe, a fellow by the name of Moshe, was able to get out of the army. He found a way of avoiding conscription. So Rav Yitzchak Elchanan turns to him and he says, Todalecha, thank you so much for this good news. And may brachos be bestowed upon your head. You're a good man. You brought me a good piece of news. I want to thank you because you lightened my heart, and now I feel besimcha. Fine. Now Moshe was one of alafim v'rivvos shepachtu es pachad shel bachur tzair Yehudi. Moshe was one of thousands upon tens of thousands upon young Jewish men who were afraid of nothing more than the Tsarist conscription into the army. It was a double danger. Number one, it was a danger on a physical level. And number two, it was a tremendous danger on a spiritual level. There was no kosher food. There was constant pressure to violate Yiddishkeit. I don't know if anyone here ever heard of Kantonistim. Did you ever hear the Kantonistim? The Kantonistim were Jews who were conscripted into the Russian army. And 25 years they served in the Russian army. They came back and they were broken, but they still were dedicated to Torah. These were the greatest Kiddush Shamayim. Anyway, getting back to our story. So thousands upon thousands of young men are absolutely frightened about the possibility that they will be taken to the Tsarist army, to Nikolai, who was very cruel. And Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, who is the Rav of Kovna, who was the Gadol Ador at his time, was very involved in every single effort to try to achieve a patur, how do you say, shechur from the draft, an exemption. Okay, we'll call it an exemption. And he was very worried about every one of these young men. Okay, so somebody comes in, gives him the good news that Moshe has been exonerated from the draft. 2 minutes later, Another person comes by with a knock on the door. Rebbe, Moshe, our friend, was freed from the draft. Now Rabbi Yitzchak Khan responds as if he didn't know the news. He fakes it out, so to speak. His face lights up with happiness. And again, thank you so much for bringing this good tidings. May all the brachos and all the success fall on your head. A third person comes in. A fourth, a fifth. 15 people came by, one after the other, to bring this piece of news to Rabbi Yitzchak Khanan. Every single one of them walked out with the feeling that he was the one who brought the news to Rabbi Yitzchak Khanan, and he was the first and the only one. No one knew that Rabbi Yitzchak Khanan was making it seem like he didn't know the news, but he really did know the news. And in the last paragraph here, you'll see, he says, Yudei Kovna, Sheikiras Ramam, Heivinu Kiyesh Levaser Lo Et HaBesorah Zot. All the Jews of Kovna knew how important and how it would bring joy to the heart of the Rav of Kovna, meaning Rav Yitzchak Khanan, if he would hear such good news about someone who was given an exemption from the draft. Mamash kemo ha-mechuyavus lo-dia, they all sensed a commitment, almost an obligation, to notify Rav Yitzchak Khanan of this great news. Because he, Rav Yitzchak Khanan, is like the father of this son, in a sense, even though not biologically. Sharehu ha-yolem of Rachum v'chanun. He was totally dedicated out of compassion to try to save them from the draft, out of love and compassion. And they all knew that this besorah would bring simcha to the father, the spiritual father. And therefore they all wanted to get that opportunity to bring the besorah. And therefore he made it seem like they, meaning each one of these 15 people, were bringing the good news. Okay.
Well, it says in the story of the Mishnah of witnesses who come, and one rabbi says, thank you, but we know, and the other, and his colleague says, let him come because next time you might need them, or something like that.
I don't remember the Gemara, but it sounds good. Okay. Now we move on to another topic.
I think it was had to do with Kiddush HaKodesh.
Oh, Kiddush HaKodesh. If you can give this out. And at this point, we're moving on to a new topic, which is called Derech Eretz. Do you see that? So let me read to you a few lines from the Peli Yoetz on Derech Eretz. He writes that Derech Eretz Rabu Se'ifavu Pratov. There are many different branches and details that come under the general umbrella rubric that's called Derech Eretz. Torahs Derech Eretz Aruchem Eretz Shivya. It's wider and broader than all the lands on the globe. And not only that, our Chachamim dedicated an entire Mesechet to this topic. It's called Mesechet Derech Eretz. And many Sfarim, he says, have been written about Derech Eretz by the great Musar authors, for example, the Reishis Chachma, the Shalom, the Shnei Luchos HaBris, the Shemit Musar, and other books. And he says, Mia Ish, Echavitz Chaim, if you really want life, then you should look and study all these different books and get a glimpse of what Derech Eretz is all about. And here he quotes the famous statement of Chazal in the Medrash, Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. The Derech Eretz even comes before the Torah. He says, Ubefrat. And if you have to ask me what type of a person has to be, you know, absolutely excellent in Derech Eretz, has to wave the flag of Derech Eretz, Mishu Begeter Talmud Chacham. If he's known as a Torah scholar, then it's absolutely critical that he exhibits Derech Eretz. V'im ein bo Derech Eretz, he's a Torah scholar, he has no Derech Eretz. Harezeh Mechalas Hashem, V'yes HaTorah, desecrates the Torah and God's name. V'shaninu, and now the Peli Yoetz quotes a Mishnah novice, which we want to spend a lot of time on. The Mishnah says, Kol sheruach habrios nochei menu. If the people are satisfied with his actions, then ruach hamakom nochem menu. Then up in Shemayim, God is happy with him. V'zeh klal shu klal gadol b'derech eretz. What is Derech Eretz all about? Sheyasa Tov, he should do good, Vayoshar, and straight, honest, V'enei Elokim V'odom, in the eyes of man and God. And he should try as much as possible to satisfy other people. V'yivatel Ritzon Ufnei, he shouldn't be selfish about himself, but selfless about others. Uteidaito Morevis Amabrius, and he should always reach out to others and try to make them happy. No matter how much he learns of the laws of Derech Eretz, he'll never learn enough. Unless he becomes a great scholar, and then he can add and figure out with his own das, make his own, how should I say, call, what's it called? His own shikul das, in order to make the decision how to act in a particular situation. Ein lohem shir. Derech Eretz has no limit on top. The sky's the limit. It keeps going on and on. Rak hakol lefi hamakom lefi hazman. There's got to be an insight and a sensitivity to the time and the place. And tzoras lisnayigim kol echav yechal al pi midosov. Leirid lisov daito v'lasos ritono kiritzon. Kiritzono im eno negin ritzona bore.
Just to
note
the abbreviation, the
total,
is it
me'eretz,
the second line?
I don't know, it should say me'eretz rabo. I don't know, you have a shin at the end, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the shin stands for. Okay, now, I gave you out a page, and most of what we're going to learn on this page is an analysis of that Mishnah in Avos, which the Pelioids builds on. As you'll see, the Lahoros Nosson, his name is Gestetner, he's a contemporary, and he writes a commentary on Avos, and that's number one on your page, and he quotes the Mishnah. Hu Haya Omer. So the Tana used to say the following, Kol Sheruach HaBrios Nocha Himenu, if the people are satisfied and they admire the way that a person acts in interpersonal relationships, is Ruach HaMakom Nocha Himenu. Then up in Shamayim, they're also very impressed with this person and very happy, very positive about it. But Kol She'ein Ruach HaBrios Nocha Himenu, if people are not satisfied with the way they're being treated by this person, is you can know for sure, Ein Ruach HaMakom Nocha Himenu, up in Shamayim, they're not happy with it. Says the Lahoros Nosson, Nira Abir, I want to add something to this Mishnah, embellish it, and give us a deeper insight based on the Chassam Sofer, who lived about 150 years ago. And the Chassam Sofer writes the following. There's a pasuk at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, which reads the following, Vayisem Nekiyah Me'Hashem Umi Yisrael, which means literally we have to be clean, both in the eyes of God and in the eyes of the people of Israel. This, by the way, my friends, is the pasuk, the verse, that is the source for what's called the Iser Maris Ayin. Meaning you're not allowed to do things that might mislead others into suspecting you of inappropriate behavior. In any event, what's bothering the Chassam Sofer here? He says the following, this pasuk indicates a double obligation. Number one, there's a chiyuv of nekiyus me'Hashem, that we have to be clean in the eyes of God. And number two, v'nekiyus mi'Yisrael amo, and clean in the eyes of the people of Israel. Heim shnei rochavim tzmudim al gabenu. It's as if we're carrying on our shoulders, in a metaphorical sense, two riders, so to speak, rochavim, meaning responsibilities that fall and weigh on our shoulders. One towards Hashem and the other towards Yisrael Am. Now, the Yoser Efshari, if you ask me which of these two obligations, that means in front of God or in front of man, is easier to fulfill, is more within reach, he says, Yoser Efshari, Latzeis Yidei Arishon, it's easier, so to speak, to fulfill your obligation vis-a-vis God, Al Yidei Shamayim, that you should be naki, you should be clean in the eyes of Shemayim. Yoser harbe, yoser, even more and more, milatzeis yidei abrios, to make people satisfied with you, so they'll compliment you and adore you. Why? Because he says, unfortunately, heim choshev machshavas zaros. They have different thoughts about you. You know, they may think and attribute to you something negative. You know, you meant it for the best, and you were really l'shem shamayim, you know, dedicated, but they twist it around. Nosim v'nosnim muzaros bilavana. I'm not sure exactly what he means by muzaros bilavana, but there's some sort of idiomatic phrase where they sit there under the moon, so to speak, and they come up with all sorts of strange interpretations of what your actions are all about. They look at it from this action, this way, that way. You know, these are like committees in shuls. You know, they look at the rabbi and they say, oh, he did this, he didn't do that. And he says, v'ocho yoser kasha mi'od ma'od. He says, in these two mandates of nekiyus b'at Lashem and nekiyus b'odom, the one that's more dangerous, meaning if you don't live up to bar, and the punishment is going to be that much greater if you're not naki mi Yisrael, if you're not clean in the eyes of man. Adli ein mispar. And he says, you can't even compare it. In other words, we divide up the Torah into two different dimensions. One is ethics, which means Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. The other is ritual law or religious law, Bein Adam L'Mokom. And he says, which is greater? Which is more of a responsibility? Which is more of a challenge? Which is going to bring us more punishment if we don't live up to it? And he says, it's the interpersonal relations, the ethical element. And here, to bring a proof, that Sam Sofer quotes the Gemara at the end of Yuma, and the Gemara there says that if you desecrate the name of God, then you won't have any kapara on Yom HaKippur. And the Gemara asks, well, what do you mean he desecrates the name of God? What's the terrible thing that he did? So the Gemara gives example that Rav, one of the great Amoraim, went into a store, a butchery, and he bought meat. He didn't have the money in his pocket to pay immediately, so basically he took it on credit. And as a result, people thought that Rav was stealing something he wasn't paying for it. Rav had every intention to pay, but he just didn't have the money on hand. He didn't have cash in pocket. That itself is a Chil Hashem. The fact that he put himself in a situation which allowed people to misinterpret and come to the conclusion that he, as a great scholar, was not ethical. And he says, "Bavonosenu harabim shchiach b'divrei abrios." It's quite common amongst the rank and file members of the community. Lamdon kazeh yased over zevu shogu befiv. They'll always use the phrase, "Oh, this guy's a lamdon," meaning he's a scholar, and yased kedover zeh, and this is what he did. This is the way people talk about scholars.
Yeah, well, wouldn't he say, you know, I'm up to have this on credit, I'll pay you next month or something? What made them think he didn't have to pay?
I guess in most cases, when you take a piece of meat, you know, you put the money on the table. Rav took the piece of meat and walked out of the store, so people start thinking he's stealing the meat.
Wow.
Again, you and I might say, well, why didn't that person have the intelligence, not only the intelligence, but what we call the kafschus, you know, to find the positive side. But you know what? A Talmud Chacham has to realize that he's always under scrutiny. They're looking at him with it's like Israel today amongst the nations. They look at us with a microscope, and every little change, every little deviation, they make a big deal, they blow it at it. And they're not willing to be malamid schus. You know, they just start talking, oh look, that's a Talmud Chacham. This is what you call a frum Jew. You know, one frum Jew deviates a little bit and right away they say it about all religious Jews. You know, they're all a bunch of cheats and so forth. So Rav now is guilty of Chil Hashem. To my knowledge, it's the only time in Shas that we find Rav guilty of anything. The Afilu al Chashad Svar B'Alma. Even because somebody came up with this idea that Rav had no intention to pay, and that's the chashad, the suspicion, that's enough to create a Chil Hashem. Says the Chasam Sofer, to begin to appreciate how severe would be the punishment for the absence of derech eretz, of treating people the right way. In other words, when we go back to this Mishnah in Amos, the emphasis here, the The primary weight here is on kol shiruach abrios no chavim menu. That's the greatest challenge, that people should be satisfied with the way you act and interact. Vahashta inami osa alamdin osa kishur v'yotzi de shamayim v'chol yecholto b'chekev shari. It comes out, says the Chassam Sofer, that the responsibility that falls on the shoulders, the frail shoulders of this Kamed Chacham, is that he has to make sure that he does everything perfectly with all his power and be very, very careful about it. The Yimlo Nizhar, Achetobo, Elu, who were the ones who falsely accused Rav of stealing? They were Shosei Shechar. The Chassam Sofer wants to denigrate them, so he calls them beer drinkers. I guess the Chassam Sofer was not very into beer drinking. You know, maybe he held that these were drunkards. Harehu kvar nilkad b'mitzudasam. All he needs to do is leave them only a little opening, and they catch him in that trap. And velze yidvu kol chaduyim, meaning we have to be. I don't know how to translate the word yidvu. It's like an anguish kind of thing, right? Do you remember when we say to an ovel, lo yidava od? Are you familiar with that? And the Sfaradim use that letter. No, sir. He says, this is what bothers me so much. It's fearful. It's frightening to think at what the punishment might be if we leave room for others to say we're not up to par, we're not ethical. V'niyarharti kamapomim efsha shekayim odom biolam. Mikras and kiem adam ba'ola mikras al matkunto. When it says ve'yisem nekiem lifnei Hashem v'lifnei ha'am, I don't know if anyone on the face of the earth has ever absolutely, completely fulfilled this requirement. It's almost impossible, because no matter what you do, I don't know if you know this, that Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu was suspect in the eyes of the people. There were a whole bunch of lower class people. Who accused Moshe Rabbeinu of stealing and other sins.
Profited the contributions for the Mishkan, he pocketed.
Pocketed, maybe he had pockets, and he took money from the Mishkan.
But that's why he did the Pekudei, the accounting. Even though he wasn't told to, he said, I'm going to prove to you I didn't keep us up.
I didn't pocket anything for myself. So look who they're suspecting. So, if you're a public figure, you got to be very careful, and you really can't even be careful enough. Says the Lahoris Nason, based on this Chassam Sofer, Harei Mavur, we see clearly, Ki Kedei Sheruach Habrius Tei Nochei Menu, how much work do you have to do in order to get to the level where the people are satisfied with your actions? They have no critique. It's even more difficult than to get to the level of Ruach HaMokom Nochei Menu, that God should be satisfied with it. And therefore, he says, the Mishnah went out of its way to say, Kol Sheruach Abrios Nochei Menu. The Mishnah wanted to tell you that if you want to achieve the highest level, then you have to be ethical to the extent that people adore you. And Kol Shekhin, how much more so, Sheruach HaMokom Nochei Menu. In other words, once you achieve this level of Ruach Abrios, then it's very easy, it's a cinch to reach the level of Ruach HaMokom. The real challenge is going to be Ruach HaBrios Nochei Menu. V'im Yotze Yedei V'yisem Nekiyim Yisrael, if he lives up to that level in which he's clean and there are no claims against him in Yisrael, his Kol Shekhin, how much more so, she Yotze Yedei V'yisem Nekiyim Hashem a Nekiyus in front of God. Vishuv Amru, now the Mishnah goes on in the flip side and says, Kol she'ein ruach habrios nochei menu, ein ruach hamokom nochei. In other words, God's evaluation of a person depends and reflects what other people evaluate him. If the other people evaluate him in a negative way, then Hashem is not happy with him. Shalom told me, you shouldn't say the Afgad v'lo yotzi dechovas habrios, even if he didn't fulfill his, lived up to the standards and demands of interpersonal relations with human beings on an ethical and mekomakom yotzi yedei shamayim. After all, he did all the mitzvahs and he was obedient and he was meticulous about all the mitzvahs. So let him at least fulfill that part of the pasuk. V'yisem nekim lifnei Hashem. Oh no, it's a package deal. Hashem Yisbrach Yodea Emes Shalasa Kichol Yecholto Bechozek Hefshari V'Eino Chayv L'Shtadu Lotzis Gam Yodea Brios V'Yomar Mali U'Lesichas Abrios Ha'ikra Shakadosh Baruch Hu Yodea Sa Emes Shani Naki Mikol Avon. If not for this Mishnah, I would have said a person says to himself, you know what? They have a problem. If they accuse me, God in heaven knows the truth. I don't have to go beyond that. If the brios, you know, the spectators want to come and speak lashon hara about me and downgrade me in derogatory terms, that's their problem. My goal is that I know the truth. I know I'm naki, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that truth. Comes along the Mishnah. He says no. Lachain, the Mishnah says, is hiru. The Mishnah warns us, shechayev adam lotzis yidei habrios. It's not enough that he thinks God knows that he had the right intentions and everything was on the up and up. No, that's not enough. He has to be yotzi yidei habrios. He has to pass that litmus test in which the people around him will adore him and evaluate him as an absolutely ethical person. If he hasn't succeeded, the Mishnah goes out of its way to tell us that God is not satisfied. You can't make up with God. You know, we have a separate contract agreement, you and I, God. Right? You know that I was sincere and I didn't want to steal from anybody. You know how dedicated I am to all the mitzvahs. And God will be happy with me. We're good buddies, me and God. You know, we have a private contract. No. That's not what Hashem wants. Who rots on Amakum? What is the will of God? She noki viene gam viene abrios, and then the gam rucham te noche himenu. If he's noki and the people adore him, then Hashem says he has a great status up on high. Adam tzarch lotzes yidei chovas abrios, kidech shetzarch lotzes yidei hamakum.
Are we talking about Talmud Chacham here, or just an ordinary person?
Well, I would say the following. The thrust here of the Chasam Sofer, which the Lahoris Nosson builds on, is the Talmud Chacham. You'll notice that he says that when we're talking about a Chacham, people are very careful. They watch him like a hawk. And therefore, Rav and the Gemara in Yuma, because he was a scholar, they start saying, oh, look at this Lamdan, look at this learned person. Kazeh Yaseh Dover Zeh. And they're constantly, it's a refrain, because they're looking up to the Talmud Chacham, and they say the following: if we could say something disparaging and accuse the Talmud Chacham of something unethical, then we won our ball game. Then we succeeded. Because what we want to do is cast an aspersion on the entire religious world. And if we can do so and convince the people, oh, look at their scholar, look at their leader, look how unethical he is. You know, Rav walks in, takes a piece of meat, doesn't pay for it. That's your leader. And this is what the cynics are trying to accomplish. They're trying to say, well, if he, as your leader or as your scholar, doesn't live up to par, the whole thing's not worth it. So that puts this tremendous weight or responsibility on the shoulders of a lamdin, a Talmud Chacham, of a leader in Israel, a rabbi, that he has to be absolutely naki, he has to be clean in the eyes of the brios. I find that this becomes very relevant in tzedaka, in giving charity, because very often people will say, why isn't the rabbi giving tzedaka? Now in Israel it's a little bit less common, but in Chutz Laaretz, where everybody knows the rabbi's salary, so they say, well, the rabbi's getting a good salary, you know, and every member of the community says, well, I chip in for his salary, right? Why isn't he giving tzedakah? So I remember my father, Zichron Levrach, whenever he was the one who was in charge of how do you say in English, magbit, of a fundraising campaign, and there were different institutions during the course of the year, he would always announce his contribution first, for two reasons. First of all, he wanted to dispel any of this lashon hara that the rabbi's not participating. And secondly, which is even more important, he wanted the people to say to themselves, well, if the rabbi is earning 100 and he's giving 100, you know, let's say he's earning $100,000 and he's giving $100 or whatever it is, that I'm earning $500,000, I should be giving five times that amount. So in a sense, in a campaign for tzedakah, it would, if the rabbi took the initiative, that would set the tone for how much money we should be giving for this. If the rabbi's giving up such a major chunk of his salary, then we certainly have to give generously. What I want to study with you now is number two on the page, which is the Yachel Yisrael, also a commentary on Avos. And he tells the following story. A Jew once came into a town on Erev Shabbos. We have to end very shortly, but I want to see if I can fit this in under the bell. And it was a very late hour. This is a story that comes from a Medrash. I don't know where this Medrash appears. It's a very interesting story. And I've never quite seen anything like it in a Medrash. He calls it Medrash Agod. If I'm not mistaken, Medrash Agod is a compilation of Yemenite Midrashim. He comes in, it's very late Erev Shabbos. Let's say Shabbos comes in at 5 and it's already 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He's got to gather himself together and find a place to stay. And he has a sum of money in a wallet, a very significant sum of money, which is basically his life's earnings. And he doesn't know what to do because it's going to be mukta on Shabbos. He doesn't want to violate the holy Shabbos. And he has no clue where to hide it. So he makes a decision that he's going to look for the most trustworthy Jew, and he's going to ask that Jew if he could possibly hold on to it over the course of Shabbos and return it to him after Shabbos. So where does he find the trustworthy Jew? He goes into the Beis Medrash, the local study house, and what, lo and behold, he finds at this late hour on Friday afternoon, there's a Jew sitting and learning. And the Jew has a hadras panim, he looks so, you know, so stately, and so, he has a countenance and so forth. He's not, and not only that, he's wearing talis and tefillin. Oh, Hashem must have sent me this guy. So he walks over to this guy and he says, "Can you do me a favor, please? I have this sum of money, it's almost Shabbos. Can you hide it for me? I'm going to be mafkided. You're going to be my watchman for it, and please return it to me after Shabbos." Comes after Shabbos, he comes over to this guy, and he asks for the money back. Guy looks at him, he says, "I don't know who you are. I didn't get any money from you." So the man is totally broken, because he has no recourse to get his money back. So what does he do? The only thing he can do is turn to God with tefillah. Out of a sense of despair, he says to the Ribono Shelom, "I didn't put this money in the hands of someone. I gave it into your hands, God. I chose this person because your name, your holy name, is written all over this person. It's like on his tefillin, it's on his talis, it's on his face, it's on everything. And now, I believed in you, God, and in your name, and in the holiness of this man who, and what am I going to do now?" So up in Shamayim, when they heard this tefillah, there was a whole hullabaloo. Here, the mafkid, the owner of the money, is right. This is a chil Hashem, and God's name is being desecrated by a man who supposedly is a representative of God, of holiness. So during the night, that same man who lost all his money had what's called Gili Elio. Elio showed up to him in his dream. And he told him the following: "You go to the wife of this man first thing in the morning and ask for your wallet back. She won't give it to you until she's convinced that her husband sent you to get the wallet back. So tell her the following. Tell her that your husband sent me to get back my wallet, and give her the following two simonim so that she'll believe you." Okay? Tell her the following. Number one, that on Leil HaSeder, in the privacy of the couple, of their room, they ate chametz. Tell her, number two, that on Leil Yom Kippur, in the privacy of their home, they ate a full meal. He shows up the very next morning after he wakes up from the dream. He goes over to this woman, gives her the two simanim, and she goes back and gives him the arnak. She realized that only her husband could have possibly told him. Nobody else knew about that thing. So he writes on the bottom, this is a punchline. Lo bichdi maser Elio dafka shnei simanim alolo. Why these two simanim would Elio and Navi give the man? Because min hashamayim rotzu lochiach lanu, the up in shamayim they wanted to prove us. Ki b'makom sheyesh pagam biyachas shebein adam lechavero. When you see a person is a thief, and that's how he treats his friend, stealing his money, biyadua, then you must know that even in Bein Adam LeMakom, even in ritual law, something is not good. Okay, we'll stop here. In Mirtz Hashem next week, I want to finish up. If you want to either hold on to the page I gave you, or you want to give it to me, and I'll hold it for you, and we'll pick up numbers 3 to 6. And finish up with Derek Eretz. We'll be there the next week.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. If anyone's interested in learning Chumash, we'll learn the parasha.
The phrase you brought before, "Achiu bitnuba Moses belevana," is a bitui from Sota, Vav Mishnah Aleph. Veshuma Achisu bitnuba Moses belevana.
And what does God say on it?
אז הוא עושה זה, אלא אם כן יסיחו בה אנשים המתכפסות יחד בלילות ותוות לאור הנה מוזוס משוזוס שמאחר שנוסעות ונוטות בה מוזוס בלבן נוספות על קצותה כאילו, they're discussing the case, this woman who's so-called a sort of...
A wanton woman.
She's sitting at night and just having a...
a schmooze about it. So wait, let's just see, where was it on the page?
It's over here. The first paragraph.
Just 1 second, I gotta just get my page out here, sorry. This is in Lahoris Nasan?
Yeah.
So he says that what? Where is it? Just 1 second. This is the paragraph that starts with Hare Mavur. Is that paragraph?
Yeah.
Okay.
Way up, and I think how are you? The first paragraph.
Oh, the first paragraph.
I think so.
Oh, who are you, Omer? Just 1 second.
And in the middle of the paragraph, it says, "V'nosim v'nosim v'nosim." It's about 8 lines.
Oh, yeah, there it is. I guess he's talking about like lashon hara, schmoozing, or what do they call it, chitter chatter, you know.
But he takes it from the Mishnah. It's not standard.
Right. Yeah, the Sam Sofi used to do this all the time. He would take phrases from a Mishnah or Gemara and he would just weave it into the sentence.